So my name is Perry Halkidis. I'm very happy to be with you here today and acknowledge my colleague, Farzana Kapadia, who's my collaborator on this work. And while I have many interesting relationships, I have none to disclose with relation to this particular talk. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about the theory of syndemics as a theory that can help inform HIV prevention studies for gay and bisexual men. I'm calling them young men who have sex with men. I'm going to describe talk a little bit about the epidemiology of the disease, a couple of slides there, then talk about the theory, and then describe our use of structural equation modeling as a means to actually test this theory, which has, you know, in the last 10 years received a lot of attention in the field of HIV prevention. And what we know about the HIV epidemic in this country doesn't change. Men who have sex with men, gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men continue to be disproportionately affected by the epidemic. If you believe various surveys about the estimates of gay men in this country, gay men are probably 2 to 5% of the population, but represent somewhere in 50% of the disease. So clearly, continues to be an issue that affects the population of gay men. What we also saw in the last decade in the population was increases in HIV in particularly young men ages 13 to 29. And in my city, my home city, which we're thinking about today, very deeply, New York City. There was an increase in HIV infection rates in 13 to 29-year-olds over the last decade. These are the data for 2001 to 2006, but this trend continues as if we were to move it forward into 2012. 33% increase in new HIV diagnoses in those ages 13 to 29, 90% of those black or Hispanic men. And if you look at 13 to 19-year-olds, it's a 50% increase. And you see similar patterns in other urban areas in the United States. So the theory of syndemics, which is one that I'm particularly fond of and one that we use at our research center, was first put forth by Merrill Singer at the University of Connecticut, and he has the theory that he sought to explain the very low health profiles that he was seeing in urban women and why urban women were affected by HIV and other health conditions at much higher rates than other women in the city. And then Ron Stahl, who's at UPitt right now, took the theory and actually applied it to gay and bisexual men. And the theory basically says that that if we think about HIV, there are a set of mutually reinforcing health epidemics that compromise the overall well-being of the person, and that this syndemic is produced, and that HIV drug use and mental health burden together are mutually reinforcing. They're synergistic. So instead of thinking about them as three separate epidemics, it makes more sense to think about them as a syndemic, and that they fuel each other. If you show me if you show me mental health burden, I'll likely show you HIV risk-taking. If you show me HIV risk-taking, I'll likely show you substance use and what have you. And that's the basic tenet of the theory. And the theory has been applied, as I said, to studies of women and to gay men, and mostly younger gay men, although we've recently started to apply it to studies of older HIV-positive men who've been living with HIV for the last 30 years. Now, so our conceptual approach to this work was to look at these three conditions, to see the synergistic effects of HIV, of HIV burden, of mental health burden, and of drug use, and to try to explain the likelihood of acquiring HIV. And the problem with the theory to date and the studies that have been published so far is that additive models have been used to look at the relations between sexual risk-taking and these psychosocial burdens. And what we wanted to do is, instead of applying the general linear models, actually try to take a somewhat more sophisticated approach using structural equation modeling to see if the theory really holds up. And I wanted the theory to really hold up as we were doing this work. And so this is data that's drawn from our study that's funded by the NIH called Project 18. It's called Project 18 because the men in the study are 18 years old when they begin in this cohort study. We also think it's our 18th project, although that may not really be true, but we're going to go with the fact that it's our 18th project, so that's good enough. And the aims of the study are listed there, but the one I'm going to talk about today is the first aim, which is we wanted to develop and test theoretically informed measurement models of the covariance of illicit drug use, unprotected sexual behavior, and mental health burden among emerging adult HIV-negative YMSM, both within and across time. And so it's a prospective cohort design with 7 waves of data collection, baseline, and then every 6 months thereafter. To be in the study, the men had to be 18 at baseline or just 19 within the first month there, had sex with a male partner in the last 6 months, consented to the protocol and oral HIV testing. We do HIV testing at each of the assessment points. And as you might imagine, as the study has proceeded over the last several years, we identify more and more infections as the men become older. we'll present that data next year. It's really pretty incredible. And agreeing to come in for a baseline assessment and 6 follow-up assessments. And at the time of the initial assessment, they were self-reporting as HIV negative. Didn't mean that they were actually HIV negative. And in fact, we identified 6 men at the baseline who ended up being HIV positive through our testing procedure. Recruitment was used both active and passive strategies, and we recruited from June 2009 to May 2011. When we screened over 2,000 individuals, ended up with our sample, our final analytic sample, which is about 600, actually 598 to be exact. The problem was that the age was so restrictive that we had men calling in who were 20 years old and 17 years old who didn't qualify for the study, met all of the other eligibility criteria, but not that particular one that we needed. So our analytic procedure was then to use structural equation modeling to develop these theoretically driven measurement models. And we started out with the hypothesis that these three constructs, mental health burden, substance use, and sexual risk taking, would all be one thing, one mega construct. That's what we began with. I'll tell you if that turned out to be true or not, but that's where we started. And so I'm going to just briefly go through the measures we use and then go right into the models and tell you what I think that means. The measures that I'll be reporting on today are the demographics, the unprotected sexual behavior, the substance use and mental health burden factors. For demographics, age, race, ethnicity, nation of birth, school enrollment status, sexual orientation, and HIV status, which we confirmed through the oral antibody test. Unprotected sex through a calendar-based technique using timeline follow-back, looking at the number of episodes of unprotected oral sex, unprotected insertive anal, and unprotected receptive anal. And an episode was defined as one instance of any of these behaviors with a partner. So in any particular day during the calendar month, you may have had more than one instance in one day. Some days you had none, some days you had 5. So it varied. In terms of mental health, we looked at PTSD, measured by this instrument, depression, loneliness, and suicide, both ideations and attempts in the previous 12 months. And for substance use, we also looked at behavior over the last month using the calendar-based technique and focused on alcohol use, marijuana use, inhaling nitrate use, and other illicit drug use. We also did a biological assay using a urine test, an iCup test, which we randomly assigned to 50% of the participants at baseline and randomly continued to assign at each of the follow-up assessments that we're doing. Okay, so here's our sample. As you can see, the sample is pretty diverse in terms of race, ethnicity, about 30% white, about 15% black, 5% Asian, Hispanic, regardless of race, about 40% of the sample. In terms of confirmed HIV status, and this is at baseline now I'm talking about, almost all the men actually turned out to be HIV negative based on the antibody test. In terms of sexual orientation, not surprising, these guys are 18. They're still developing their sexual orientation, their sexual identity. 58% said they were not exclusively homosexual, 41% exclusively homosexual. Most of them were enrolled in school, and the majority, close to 90%, were born in the United States. These are now the episodes of unprotected sex in the last month, and I'll just preview by saying that at baseline we saw less unprotected sexual behavior than we have at, let's say, the 24 and 30 and 36 month assessments as these men continue to age. But at baseline there was some unprotected sex, ranging, wide variability, as is often the case in these self-reported data. Even if you do a calendar-based technique, it's self-reported at the end of the day. The behavior that was most common was unprotected receptive oral sex. Performing oral sex was the behavior that they mostly engaged in. When we looked at mental health burden, what we saw was somewhat elevated rates for PTSD in particular. We saw about 17% who had suicidal ideation in the previous 12 months, and about 5% who attempted suicide. And then in terms of substance use, the number of days of use, now we counted days here, not episodes, as we did for sex. So about 4 days of alcohol use, about 5 days of marijuana use, not a lot of inhaling nitrate use. And this is interesting when you look at the literature on HIV prevention in gay men, you often see this particular substance that appears much more frequently than we're seeing it in this particular data set. Other illicit drugs, and this is, remember, a combination of other substances. So there's a lot of things that are going into that particular variable. Any drugs in urine, and number of drugs in urine, the variables are there. So about 36% had some identification of any drugs in their urine based on the urine test that we did. Okay. So what we then proceeded to do was try to put these measurement models together. First order models for each of those three constructs, and then a second order model where we were trying to combine all of them into one larger mega construct, a second order construct. So in this first order model, this is the first order model for unprotected sex, where we set episodes of unprotected insertive anal at 1 so that we can calibrate the rest. We saw, in fact, that all of the variables other than the HIV variable, again, that one was difficult, didn't load because only 6 men actually ended up being HIV positive of the 598. But insertive anal, receptive anal, and unprotected oral all loaded together. They all loaded together. These are the weights that you see here by the arrows on this construct that we're calling unprotected sex. Similar thing for the first order measurement model for mental health burden. Here, setting suicidal thoughts at 1, attempted suicide dropped out. It failed to converge. But total depressive symptoms, total loneliness, and total PTSD, again, as is shown in the next diagram, loaded together on this construct that would be called mental health burden. And then the third measurement model, which was the model for substance use, setting days of alcohol, 1 here to do the calibration and to test the convergence, days of marijuana, inhalant nitrates, days of other drugs, and any drugs in the urine, that variable, yes or no, that binary, again loaded on a model that looked like that. All right, so we felt pretty content with that these variables, these observable things, that these observable variables loaded together in a way that made us understand them as representing something bigger than what each of them were individually, these three mega constructs. So what did we do next? Then we wanted to test this second order model. And as in the second order model, we used the 13 observable variables retained in the analysis from the first order models as indicators of what we call a single syndemic factor, one big mega factor. And fit indices of that suggested that the data did not fit that model, that there was not this one thing where all 13 indicators came together to fit this one construct. And that this was not likely one latent variable that existed. So instead what we did is then we tested a different model where we tested a second order model in which mental health burden and drug use were put together, and we examined that in relation to unprotected sex, which was retained as a first order factor. And this made sense from the literature that had been published so far, and the literature that had been published so far looked at sex as an outcome in relation to these burdens that existed. And when we did that, we had a model that actually fit very well, and this is a pictorial representation of it, showing basically that substance use and mental health burden load together on this second order factor, and that this second order factor is highly related to unprotected sex. Right? So that made us pretty happy. So in conclusions, based on this work, and you know, this is a theory that I love and I'm very fond of, and you know, I sort of like, this work exists on the shoulders of those who have done it, who have used it for many years. We wanted to take it and actually add some, for lack of a better word, I'll use a New York word, some oomph to this theory, and some like, you know, statistical gravitas to this theory. So we were able to effectively fit these first order models, and then a second order model for drug use and mental health burden, which was highly associated with unprotected sex. So the observable and latent constructs across all three health states failed to fit together as one model, as I said, as a single syndemic, but that aligns with the previous research in this domain. So for me, what I take away from this is that clearly, as has been written before and as this work continues to show here, is that if we're going to look at the HIV epidemic in this population of gay and bisexual men and other men who have sex with men, you know, that's only a small proportion of them, we need to look at these particular conditions, their substance use, their mental health states, and their sexual risk-taking in conjunction with each other. That treating each of them in isolation is not going to solve the problem at the end of the day. And that affecting a change in the psychosocial stressors that young gay and bisexual men experience will ultimately lead, will likely lead to lower levels of unprotected sex on both the individual and on the population level. And thus, to me, this means that we need to develop supportive policies and holistic programs that attend to these societal and structural conditions that create these vulnerabilities in young men. Like, so these young men are not brought to these conditions in their lives, to substance use and to these mental health states, because they're living in a vacuum, right? They're living in a real context and in a real society where they are experiencing stressors, they're experiencing discrimination, they're experiencing homophobia, they're experiencing this on a spectrum. Like all young gay men, they're not all experiencing it the same way. But consistently, these experiences are the ones that are making them vulnerable to these stressors, right? And which are ultimately making them vulnerable to these health problems, and that these health problems are ultimately fueling each other. So next steps, and I'll wrap it up right here because I know I'm running out of time, we're going to do a longitudinal analysis to examine this endemic over time, because this was just the baseline data. It would be important to look at if this endemic changes over time as these young men emerge into their early 20s. A multi-level analysis to look at micro, meso, and macro-level factors that explain this endemic, and an HIV incident analysis. And as we're finding in our data is pretty consistent with the data from New York City and other urban areas. The young Black and Hispanic men are much more affected by becoming HIV positive than the white men. Syndemic theory, I think, supports a holistic approach to the health of gay men. Health needs to be thought of as more than HIV. The focus is too narrow. And we need to think about this, we need to think about HIV prevention, especially for the new generation of gay men, as part of a larger total health program. And I'll leave it at that.